From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Many of you are following the change in U.S. policy in Syria, the intense fighting that's happened over the past five, 6 days, and the new sanctions. In this hour, I'll talk with UC Davis Professor of Human Rights Studies, Dr. Keith Wattenpah. He is a leading historian of the contemporary Middle East. Also, I think we can expect Syria to be a topic in the Democratic presidential debate tonight in Ohio. 12 candidates have qualified, including two Californians this time, Kamala Harris and Tom Steyer. NPR is going to simulcast this CNN New York Times broadcast of the debate. That starts at 5 o'clock today. At 4:30, I'll host a special CAP Radio debate preview show. This will focus on California and Nevada. My guests include Ken Rudin, Sac State Professor Kristen Tudor, and CAP Radio's PolitiFact reporter Chris Nichols. So I hope that you will join us for that. Now, with an early look to the debate, we have on the phone from Washington, D.C., Alex Rorty. He is the national political writer for McClatchy. And Alex, it's great to have you back on CAP Radio and on Insight.
Hey, thank you so much, Beth. Appreciate you inviting me back on.
So you've been following the presidential candidates. Where does Tom Steyer's, not only his candidacy fit in, but the presence on stage tonight, how's he going to fit in this new atmosphere for him?
Well, it's a good question, and I think you have to say, not to be cruel or anything to Tom Steyer, but he's on the fringe right now. He wasn't able to qualify for the September debate. He was only able to qualify for the October debate, not because the qualifications were any easier to make, but because you had a longer time frame with which to meet those qualifications. So he is someone who I think, you know, at this point barely registers in the polls, despite spending a lot of money, particularly in an early state like Iowa. And I think people look at him and they're not quite sure what the message is right now, right? You know, with Joe Biden, people know that the message is he can beat Donald Trump. With Elizabeth Warren, people know that the message is she has a plan. I don't think people are quite so sure what Tom Steyer is going to say, what he's going to bring to the table. And I will say he starts off at something of a disadvantage, and this is going to provide an opportunity for some of his critics. You know, he's a billionaire. He's self-funding his campaign, and you've already seen candidates like Elizabeth Warren say that they don't think that that's appropriate. That you should be getting your money from grassroots donations like she does or like Bernie Sanders does. I'll be honest, you know, money is still very important in politics. If you have a lot of it, it can be a big advantage, but it's not quite clear, despite that, where Tom Steyer fits in this Democratic primary right now.
Some Californians listening to you right now are thinking, you sound like you're from the East Coast, because in California, Tom Steyer's been holding town halls, he's been running ads, he has been banging the drum on impeachment. And I think he's going to stand on the stage and say, I've been calling for this for a long, long time. That might be news, though, I understand, to get to your point, to the rest of the country.
Right, right. And look, he has spent an awful lot of money on ads on impeachment for the last couple of years. I would note, he's put himself in those ads, which was a little conspicuous to some of us, or someone who was viewed as a potential presidential candidate even then. But look, that's going to be his message, and maybe that's his entryway into this debate. I still think it's going to be tricky for him. The thing that you have to keep in mind for tonight, you know, there are going to be 12 candidates on stage. I would say, just in my own personal experience, 6 or 7 candidates tends to be too many in a debate, right? 12 candidates, I'm not quite sure I've ever seen a debate quite like that. Even if you spread it out over 3 hours, you're only going to get so much speaking time. So for someone like Tom Steyer, and look, stranger things have happened in politics, to be sure, but he's only going to get a small window to make an impression, and maybe that's the message, though. Maybe it is, I've been out front in impeachment, you've seen me, I put my money where my mouth is. Maybe that helps him get some traction here in this race.
This might be the biggest presidential debate field ever on one stage. Were you saying, when you were saying putting himself in the ads, was you suggesting that there's this weird perception about an ad that says impeachment, impeachment, and you see Tom Steyer?
Well, I think what some political observers here in D.C. anyway saw that and said, oh, you know, he's trying to help the impeachment cause. Yes, of course. But when you put yourself on camera, that's a very deliberate choice. And you're also trying to raise your own profile at that point. And I think the perception was at that point he is trying to raise his name ID ahead of his own presidential bid, because like you just mentioned, he is better known in California, but he is not very well known to most of the country, you know, with the exception of some Democratic groups and Democratic strategists with whom, you know, he has donated a lot of money to the cause, to the Democratic cause over the years. They know him, but I think the voters don't know him very well. And I think the idea was he was putting himself out there that way, in part because he wanted to get better known ahead of a presidential campaign.
So we've got Tom Steyer, new to the debate stage. We have Kamala Harris running her campaign as a California senator. And have you seen the polls? Who's leading the Democratic field in California?
Yes. Well, it's not Kamala Harris.
It's not.
Unfortunately for her.
So Elizabeth Warren is not only polling strong in California, but she is polling strong across the country. Tell me about her candidacy and the expectations on her tonight.
Well, you know, she is at minimum at this point a co-front runner with Joe Biden. She has, you know, really in the just in the last few weeks, if you look at some national polling averages, she's actually ahead of Joe Biden. There was a Quinnipiac University poll released just yesterday that had her a few points ahead of Joe Biden. So what does that mean? You know, obviously it's good news for her campaign. She has had this slow, steady rise really since the beginning of summer, even late spring, and has been able to break through in this primary in a way that very few other candidates have been able to. But on the debate stage, when you are the front runner, things start to change, right? You're no longer kind of on the side, able to talk about your own message and maybe take a few criticisms of some of your rivals. You're the one who's going to be receiving some of that criticism. You're going to be the focus of not just the moderators, but some of your rivals like Joe Biden, possibly Bernie Sanders, possibly someone like Beto O'Rourke. And that's going to be a new position for her. You know, we started to see, I think, a little bit of that in Houston, just a little bit, where people were starting to push her on some of the specifics of her plans, how she's going to fund some of her ideas. But I don't think she's gotten the full-on weight of being a front runner like we've seen Joe Biden, right? Like, I mean, Joe Biden has taken a lot of punches so far, not just this primary, but in each of the debates. And I think the question is it going to be Elizabeth Warren's turn tonight? And how does she hold up? You know, I mean, this is the test of anyone who wants to win the nomination in such a competitive primary. How do you handle the scrutiny? And I think we're all going to be sitting there tonight waiting to see how she does.
Two more questions, Alex. Number one, outside of D.C., and I know you travel, so you talk to people about the Democratic field. What's being talked about when you get outside of the Capitol? So start there.
Well, I would say just the one thing that stands out to me is how polarized people are. Right. You know, I was knocking on doors in a sort of middle class, upper middle class neighborhood outside of Louisville recently, actually. And these people kind of already looking ahead to the general election of 2020. And I wouldn't say, you know, Beth, that I noticed a lot of middle ground in people's perception. Right. There wasn't like, oh, President Trump, I don't really know about him, you know, kind of on the fence. No. It was either a very prompt eye roll when you talked about him and a couple minutes about someone explaining why they didn't like him or they thought he had been a bad president, or it was the opposite, right? You know, and it was people who were supportive. And I think when you look at the polls, that certainly is backed up to the experience that I've had on the ground, you know, that the percentage of people who somewhat approve or somewhat disapprove of Trump is almost non-existent. It is either you really like the guy or you really dislike the guy. And I think that that's true of where we are in politics, and that's where we're going to be in the general election. There just aren't that many fence sitters right now. I would add to that, though, one interesting thing to keep in mind, and I wrote a story to this effect last week. When you're asking, like, what issues come up for people, look, obviously President Trump is an issue, and obviously that comes up. I would say, though, there is this interesting phenomenon. For as much as we will talk about President Trump, or maybe we will talk about Syria or impeachment, all very important things, the truth is, a lot of people, when you ask them what concerns them the most, it's still, well, my health care costs are rising. You know, it's still college isn't as affordable as it used to be. It still really does focus for a lot of people, a lot of important voters, just the sort of traditional pocketbook issues that have always been important. And I know that that is an issue for both a lot of Republicans and Democrats in D.C., both parties worrying that their own party kind of lose focus of that sometimes, and that when it comes time to campaign next year, they really need to refocus their message on one that explains both how our agenda will help you just with your own personal bottom line, and conversely, how the other party's agenda hurts your bottom line. And that should be the political focus. Doesn't always play out that way in D.C., for sure.
Well, you answered my last question, which was going to be about what people really care about. So, Alex, thanks so much for joining us today. Tonight will be an interesting night, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Beth. Appreciate it.
That is Alex Rorty. He's the national political writer for McClatchy, and he was the co-host of the McClatchy podcast Beyond the Bubble, if you are a fan of that one. Tonight is an all-Democrat event, at least in the candidates who will be on the debate, but we wanted to hear at least one Republican voice in the mix today. So on the phone now from out of the country, in fact, is political strategist Mike Madrid. Hi, Mike. It's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Beth, I always love joining you.
So I think when you say you are a Republican, you might get asked to clarify that, especially in the context of President Trump. So I don't usually begin there with you, but what do you say to people? Let's address that.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to your listeners, too. I'm kind of a Republican in exile. I view myself very much as a traditional, you know, conservative, which is really diametrically opposed to what Donald Trump and the new Republican Party has become, which is much more of a populist, nationalist sort of party, if you will. And there's a big debate in the party between some more traditional establishment, if you will, conservatives, and this emergent nationalist party that Donald Trump has kind of consumed and is recasting in his own image. So I've been a very critical, publicly critical voice against the President of the United States and the direction of the party generally, but I still believe very firmly that there is a role for conservatism in our modern political discourse.
How does that compare, do you think, to what you would now call a typical California Republican?
Well, that's a really good question, too. I think that what you saw beginning a couple decades ago was a more progressive, I guess, moderate, mainstream sort of conservative, somebody who's looking to make government work through a conservative lens. Many of us were not just knee-jerk anti-government simply because that's what the ideology mandated. What we have seen now is the party, the national party at least, and very strong pockets in California, really adhering to a more nationalist framework. And what I mean by that is a lot of this is driven by the racial identity politics of a shrinking, white, non-college-educated America. And where that demographic exists in California, the Republican Party is actually doing quite well. The problem is there are not that many places in California where that demographic exists. There are only 7 members of Congress out of the 54-member delegation that are Republicans, and they tend to be, as I say, in the mountains, the deserts, and the forests of California. They're rural, sparse areas along the inland spine. And beyond that, the party is shrinking at an incredibly fast rate.
You probably watch the Democratic debates because of the work that you do. But what is there to watch and listen in the debates for a California Republican or a Nevada Republican? Are these important events?
I think they're very important events because you have to remember, you know, I'm not just a Republican, I'm an American, you know, first and foremost, and I'm concerned about the direction of the country. I did not vote for Donald Trump. As I said, I did not vote for Hillary Clinton either. There are voices in the Democratic Party that I do listen to because even though I've spent 25 years of my professional career, my adult life, working in Republican and conservative politics, I will not be voting for Donald Trump this cycle, but I am listening very closely to some of the Democrats to see if I could possibly vote for a Democrat this time. What concerns me is the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing of the party, which is becoming dominant. It's a lot of populist rhetoric, anti-establishment rhetoric, which is not unlike what we saw with Donald Trump. And this emerging populism is a real threat to both parties. It's not just happening in the Republican Party. It's really taken root in the left, the American left as well. And so this anti-Wall Street, everything big in the Democratic Party, if you just put the word big, the adjective big in front of anything, it automatically becomes evil. Well, that's exactly what Republicans were doing when we were talking about government. If you said it's big government, it became evil. And it's a sign of a broader societal phenomenon that we are increasingly concerned about things that we cannot control. And it's neither a Republican nor a Democratic problem. It's a social problem. And so as much as I have lamented the demise of the Republican Party in terms of a party that actually has a core and believes in something, it's very evident that that is occurring in the Democratic Party at the same time. And it's something I think Americans need to be concerned about, not just partisan Democrats or partisan Republicans.
Certainly an important subject that will come up tonight is Syria, the dramatically shifting U.S. policy, the refugee situation, and ISIS back at the table, Mike. So how important in terms of the ballot you're going to cast in the presidential election next November is what's happening in Syria and what the candidates will say about it?
That's a really great question, because what we're seeing is foreign policy really begin to kind of move to the forefront again in a way that we have really not seen since the Cold War debates between Republicans and Democrats and our role in the world and America's positioning as either a global policeman or a peacekeeper, depending on your perspective. The Syrian debacle that Donald Trump has led us down this path towards is one I think needs to be concerning to all Americans. It's a foreign policy based on whimsy as opposed to some sort of roadmap towards a more peaceful and prosperous and stable future. So the Syrian policy, I think, again, look, in the Syrian problem, I would argue, really began under the Obama administration with drawing the red line. I think many of us remember that debate. I thought it was almost impossible to do a worse strategy towards Syria for an American president until Donald Trump, you know, took over, and it has gotten worse. So I think, again, as a political professional, watching foreign policy and the concerns of America's role abroad becoming an emergent issue is one that is a very deeply concerning. It's a way that we have not had to practice politics for about, you know, 20, 25 years. There have always been concerns about the Iraq war. There have always been concerns about the Middle East. There always will be, frankly. But when we begin to see the Russian threat, the vacuum in Syria that is being filled by reemergent ISIS, an increasingly aggressive China, North Korea, where the policy is just simply directionless, it gives you great pause as again, not just as an American now, we're talking as a member of the global community. America has always held a very firm place in the global geopolitical structure. I'm afraid that that's really no longer the case.
Well, Mike, I think we could fill the hour with this conversation. I do wish your phone line was a little bit better, but I thank you for your time today. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's good to have your voice on the air. And in fact, we're going to continue the Syria discussion in our next segment. But we'll convene like this again and continue the conversation. I so much appreciate your voice and your time.
Thanks for the time, Beth. Sorry about the connection.
That's okay. That's okay. Thank you. And again, that was Republican political strategist Mike Madrid of Grassroots Lab. And here's the rundown for this afternoon. At 4:30, it's our special live CAP Radio presidential debate preview. We'll focus on California and Nevada and, of course, the candidates. My guests include Ken Rudin, the political junkie, Sac State professor of debate Kristen Tudor, and CAP Radio's PolitiFact California reporter Chris Nichols. At 5, the CNN New York Times Democratic debate live from Ohio will be simulcast. So I hope you can join us later today for all of it. Up next, Dr. Keith Wattenpah on, as we've been talking about, the dramatically shifting situation in Syria and Turkey and how connected so many people here are to it. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.